So let me first extend a welcome to those of you who might be here for the first time. If you've not been here for a while, welcome back. And if you come here regularly, welcome. Waking up to the way things really are. Waking up to the truth of the way things really are brings with it many, many things. It isn't just about freedom, liberation, peace, knowing what love really is. It's not just about these things. But it's about truly awakening to what gratitude is. Gratitude as a spontaneous flowering of thankfulness. Our task over the last few weeks here has been to explore the historical Buddha's main teaching on meditation. The main teaching on meditation that he offered is called the Satipatthana Sutta, or Maha Satipatthana Sutta. The great sutra, sutra means talk or sermon. The great sutra on the four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness is that power or quality of us that has the inborn, innate, inherent capacity to observe, to attend, free from judgment, free from decision, and free from commentary. These words that we'll explore, that I'll share some words, are not for the purpose of explanation. Although hopefully there'll be some explanation. The purpose of these words is for realization. The purpose of spiritual practice, any kind of spiritual practice, is not to understand things intellectually. It's not to explain yourself to yourself or to someone else, although that can happen. The mind, so to speak, can become clearer. Clarity is not realization. Clarity is not freedom, although it's a kind of experience that comes and goes. If we're going to talk about freedom, if we're going to talk about liberation, we need to contemplate and consider something that doesn't come and go. Is it possible, right now, that we could consider abiding in eternity even as we negotiate our way through time? Or is this just an idea, lofty, attractive, entertaining? All of us have experienced true mindfulness, true fullness of attention that's free from judgment, decision, and commentary. It happens every day. To some extent. Sometimes we're busy, so to speak. Our mind is busy, our body-mind is busy, involved in whatever we're doing, thinking we need to do, accomplish, complete, keep up with, etc., that we miss the profundity the subtlety of mindfulness. Why did the historical Buddha give this great teaching on the four foundations of mindfulness? Why didn't he give a great teaching, a greater teaching on concentration? He gave a great teaching on concentration. Why is the Satipatthana Sutta called the Maha, the Great Sutra, on the foundations of mindfulness? When I ask why, it isn't to answer with thought, although that might happen. It's to feel into the texture of what these words are pointing to. Because until we can sense or feel into the texture, the ambience of what the words are pointing to, we're at risk of being seduced and caught and imprisoned in our thinking about things. Seeing things, knowing things the way they really are, is what this talk is aiming at. So, brief review of the last few weeks. I'm losing track of how many weeks now we've been exploring this sutra. I was thinking I was going to try to pull it off in a couple of weeks, and it's feeling starting to get up to about four, and I realized tonight it could go on for another four. But I'm okay, because when the Dalai Lama talked about the last aspect of the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, when he gave the talk on the Four Noble Truths in London some years back, he went on for several weeks just on that. So I'm safe, I'm covered. See if we can do some justice to this. Hello, Saranji. Again, feeling into where the words are pointing experientially. Because even though these words are concepts, perhaps good fortune will arise in that there'll be a falling away of thinking about this, a falling away of trying to understand this, a falling away of trying to understand yourself, understand life, understand anything. And of course, then a question that I would ask, what remains when there's a falling away of attempting to get anything, to get away from anything, to understand anything, to figure anything out? What is here? And that set of words is pointing to something that's always here. Or is it said in the teachings, always already here? So the sutra begins with the contemplation of the body, the first foundation for mindfulness. Again, mindfulness, observing without decision, judgment, or commentary. That's non-interfering awareness. Contemplation of the body. Notice right now, the body's in a posture. The body can also move into a different posture, and it does this throughout the day. Even in the sleep, the body moves around. In deep sleep, often it doesn't move. But in the dream states, the body moves. Contemplation of the body means mindfulness of the posture, mindfulness of the movements of the body, and of course, inside that, so to speak, mindfulness of the sensations. For the purpose of seeing the true nature of the body, the true nature of the sensations, which includes the breathing, notice the breath. What happens in the contemplation of the breathing is it's realized the breath is breathing itself. Sometimes there's volition, there's another factor of mind. Volition arises in relation to breathing, and a deeper breath occurs. But any time there isn't a volition to change the breathing, the breath is breathing itself. constantly changing. So the in-breath arises and passes, the out-breath arises and passes. This has been happening since the first breath, and it will be happening right up until the last. This body began to breathe on its own at some point, and it will cease, it will stop. This is the truth. The breath arises and passes. The breath is impermanent. It is not solid. It is not fixed. It is a stream of energy. In the contemplation of the body and the breathing, this becomes experientially clear as contrasted to these words that are describing it. Now, in the sutra, it talks about some other aspects of the body that are quite challenging for many people to consider. It's called the contemplation of the body in relation to the carnal ground, which means this body's going to end up dissolving into the earth or being burned or however you might set it up or others do it to this body. What am I saying right now? The body may be a very critical vehicle for awakening, but the body's not who you are. In the contemplation of the body, at any moment it can be realized, the body is not who I am. And in that moment there may be spaciousness, there may be ease, there may be delight or joy, the insight into liberation from imprisonment in a body, even while still having a body. How about that? So this contemplation of the body is the first foundation of mindfulness. Without this foundation, we can't really move into the second contemplation, the second foundation for mindfulness. And that's the contemplation of feeling. In this context, feeling means pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, as contrasted to emotions. So feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Notice right now, there are sensations in the body somewhere that you would probably, if you asked yourself or someone else asked you, what kind of feeling is that? Can you find a pleasant feeling somewhere? How about on the tip of your nose? A place we might not have looked all day long. How's the tip of the nose? How about the tip of the ear? You might go, ooh, that's not really pleasant, that's more neutral. Although along the back perhaps somewhere there's some sensations or feeling of unpleasantness. Most of the time when people are meditating, if they're moving the body, they're moving the body because the body is experiencing some unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant sensation has arisen. And so there's an adjustment to change that. Every moment of sense contact, and we'll get to this when we get to the fourth foundation, at least we'll begin that. We'll go further with that tonight. Every moment of sense contact, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, tangible, brings with it feeling. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Pleasant feelings, the mind tends to like them, wants them to continue. Unpleasant feelings, the mind tends to not like those, wants them to not happen. Neutral feeling, mind doesn't know often what this is. Somewhere in between pleasant and unpleasant, there's this place called neutral in feeling. Very subtle. When this arises for people in meditation, even if their concentration is fairly strong, they tend to get a little bored or a little sleepy. There's not enough going on here. The other thing that happens for some people is when they start to meditate deeply, and pleasantness, lots of pleasantness arises, they get imbalanced, they get excited. They begin to lose their sense of mindfulness, and then they want something to ground them, and sometimes they actually start craving for an unpleasant feeling, believe it or not. Get me down in. Especially if this thing starts to literally show itself as energy, and it actually starts to dissolve. Okay, this thing isn't solid. There's nothing solid about this. Scientific fact. There's more space between the particles than there are particles. If we put it under a powerful enough microscope, we would literally see this. What happens in the meditation is that that becomes experientially clear. And for some people, not everyone, but for some people, as that opening takes place, they become afraid, if not terrified, of what? Of dissolution, of their identity as it's connected to bodily form. Now there's a really nice kind of piece of liberation that comes there as that's allowed to have happen. And what happens then is that fear, or that terror, that loss of identification with the body falls away. And as that falls away, fear of death falls away. What's going to die, my friends? What's going to die? Or as Stephen Levine said in his book, very famous book, in its time, who dies? Which obviously has within it, what lives? Since living has no opposite, the opposite of death is birth. Living then connotes or suggests something of what I suggested earlier tonight, the eternal. We can't understand these things with our mind. The words can only point into a space that's incomprehensible. But yet something can be sensed. Something can be intuited. And perhaps something can truly be known, but not by the mind. And when I say mind right now, I mean the intellectual mind. So the thinking is like a precipice, it's like a cliff that we walk up to, the edge of that cliff is there, and boom. We either hold back, and we need to stay in what we know, and what we can understand, and perhaps what doesn't confuse us, or, as it's said by many, there's a leap of faith into the unknown. Guess what? The unknown is presenting itself ongoingly, right here, right now. That's the present. The present is the unknown blossoming into the known. That's the way it is. So the contemplation of the feeling, the second foundation of mindfulness, is very handy because many of us are conditioned to react to the feelings that have come, liking the pleasant, not liking the unpleasant, and thus creating suffering for ourselves by resisting the flow of life as feeling. Flow of life as body, flow of life as feeling. These things become clearer as we settle down. Stop trying to get someplace other than where we are and really get to know what's happening here. What's happening right here? Watch where this next foundation goes, and then of course the fourth, which is the largest of the four foundations. The fourth is the Maha. The Maha Foundation. This is just review to this point, okay? Third foundation of mindfulness is the contemplation of mind. Contemplation of mind, keep it simple right now because it flowers out and blossoms in the fourth foundation. Contemplation of mind is really, to say it simply, is to know the mind that craves, to know the mind that has aversion, and to know the mind that is deluded, and to know when the mind is free of these things. To know when the mind is not involved in wanting something that it doesn't have, not wanting something that it does have, or being confused. For any human being who can see through these tendencies of wanting what isn't there, not wanting what is here, or getting confused, simply see those qualities, okay, sets the stage. Yes, it does. It sets the stage. It promises the possibility that the fourth foundation of mindfulness simply begins to arise naturally, without effort. As I'm talking, it sounds like this is progressive. got to do this, and then you do this, and then you do this, and then you get lucky and you're ready for this. It's not really like that. It's not linear. And yet, notice the possibility that the mind says, that sounds contradictory. And yet, once the contemplation of the body is matured, the contemplation of the feeling can then mature. The subtlety in the contemplation of the mind can mature. Meanwhile, ongoingly, the contemplation of the dharmas, or sometimes called the mind objects, is maturing ongoingly. So what am I saying? I'm saying from one place in the way we can think about this, it sounds progressive. Just like yesterday preceded today. That's a way of thinking about life or the unfoldment of experience in time. And yet, all that's actually happening is what is happening right now. And that could include, I start thinking about Tuesday night or the Super Bowl that I missed. And my friend called me up and said, it's a really good game, you're missing it. Wouldn't it be interesting? Come up to the moments when the body's ready to breathe its last, and you start thinking or contemplating that you missed something. This happens for folks sometimes. They get quite filled with the knowing or the compulsion to say something to someone. They need to say something to someone. Are they trying to get complete? Are they trying to exit well? I missed something. I'm missing something. Are you missing something? Is something needing to be added to what's happening here for us? This is a feeling that arises sometimes. It's a belief. It's a view that arises sometimes. Something is missing. Something is not right. I need to correct myself. And my education at times, my schooling, my parents, my friends, reinforced my view that something is missing here. I need to adjust myself. I need to change myself. I need to transform myself. We don't even know what we're thinking about really there when we say myself. We haven't really investigated to know what we're talking about. We buy the ideation, the thought, the concept, the belief system, that spirituality or awakening has to do with transforming myself or making myself a better person. Before my God or my Savior or at least my friends. We buy it sometimes without considering what are we really doing. So this fourth foundation begins with the contemplation of what are called the cell phones of the world.
Hello? Yeah.
I'm tempted to go on a tangent right now. I'm going to hold back. Are there actually any interruptions, my friends? Or are there just things that we call nuisances or noises, something that gets in the way of what we think is supposed to be happening? Yeah. Here we go with craving and aversion again. We want to see what a mind that's awakening is all about. We need to see that these filters of craving and aversion, this should be happening, this shouldn't be happening, I like this, I don't like this, until we can see, as it's said by the third Zen patriarch, the way is clear and open for he, she, who has no preferences. This way, W-Y, this way is the Dharma, the truth of the way things are. The way is clear and open for he, she, who has no preferences. Please understand, when we look at these hindrances I'm going to talk about, these hindrances, this is not about living in a way where there's never any desire or aversion or sleepiness or restlessness or doubt. Mindfulness liberates you from the idea that you need to not have these states, which you can't help but have you noticed? But sometimes the confusion or delusion gets going and says, okay, the Buddhist path or awakening or freedom is about not having any desire, not having any attachment, not having any aversion, so let me see if I can sit and not have those things. And then if I can get that going for a second, I'm going to walk around and interact with people and have them interact with me, and I'm not going to have those things. We don't know what we're talking about. That's not how it works. So mindfulness of desire, aversion, sleepiness, restlessness, and doubt reveals that these states are ultimately not hindrances. They are states that arise and pass, and they're actually very interesting. Prior to mindfulness shining its light on these so-called hindrances, because again, let's notice, the word hindrance suggests blockage, it suggests something that's in the way, it suggests something perhaps that needs to be removed. Mindfulness reveals that desire, aversion, restlessness, sleepiness, and doubt remove themselves. They arise and they pass all of their own nature. Here we go. The nature of things is that everything arises and passes. This is impermanence. The gross level of impermanence is to see everything has a beginning and an end. Without even any deep contemplation, we can see this. We can see this happening every day. The subtle level of impermanence reveals that between the beginning and the end, all there is transition. All there is transition. Until this is clear, the habit, deeply rooted as it may be, habit or conditioning in the mind, is to grasp at or resist experience. In this opening to what it means to see the beginning and the end of things, the beginning and the ending, better said like that, it's a verb, life's a verb, life is living itself. Everything is got an ing after it. Until that's clear, we don't see the unsatisfactoriness of grabbing hold of something that's unpossessible. So the hindrances don't need to be removed then, do they? Freedom isn't about having no hindrance. Although there may be moments, and the sutta refers to these as a possibility, to see clearly when the mind is not involved in desire, aversion, restlessness, sleepiness, and doubt. What's actually happening? I could say to you, moments of mindfulness are moments of freedom. Moments of mindfulness are moments of happiness. Moments of mindfulness are moments of ease and peace. Moments of mindfulness allow things to be as they are. There's no one being mindful. There's not somebody back in here who's becoming mindful. Mindfulness is impermanent as well. It arises and it passes. Notice it. If you like, you can change the term to attention. Attention arises and passes by itself, doesn't it? Okay, now, that's all a warm-up. So a little bit of review, a little bit of warm-up. Okay. In this fourth foundation of the dharmas, or the mind objects, the hindrances, the first part, the next part, is the contemplation of the five aggregates. Now you'll notice, as I've said before, that these teachings, they keep overlapping in ways that are that's very, very handy, very useful. Now watch the overlap. Contemplation of the five aggregates means this. Contemplation of the body as body. Contemplation of the feeling as feeling. Contemplation of mental formations. Contemplation of perception. Contemplation of consciousness. What's sitting here right now are the five aggregates. Aggregate means grouping or collection. Notice that it's impossible to separate the body from the feeling. Notice that it's impossible to separate the body, feeling, from mental formations, in this case thoughts. And yet, these things can be distinguished. They are distinguishable. They can be discerned. What discerns them? Mindfulness. What discerns them? Consciousness. Before we go to consciousness, perception. What is perception? Perception could be defined as the way you see something. How many people can see this as something other than a clock? Pretty difficult, huh? Try to see this as a banana. Try. We see this as a clock because the word clock has been conditioned into our mind to describe this object. Now, this is a stick, right? Piece of wood. It's not too hard to consider it comes from a tree. These things have been conditioned into our mind. The way that you see things based on cognition, on memory, on how experiences have been impressed upon you or laid into your mind generates the view that you have about things, including what you think is true or not true. Men and women. Try to look at a person, either male or female, in this room and see them as the opposite sex. Now, don't go too far with that. Notice the perception that this is up, this is down, this is forward, this is backward. All you have to do is move your body and all of a sudden this is forward. If I'm facing out there towards the pool, this is backward. It's just changed. Earth is down, sky is up, stars up there. Perception. And I could go on, but this is hugely important because until it's realized that perception is not reality, it's just a part of reality. Perception is not the truth, with a capital T, it's just part of the truth. Until that's clear, you tend to believe your perceptions, have opinions about other people's perceptions, get invested and attached and cling to your perceptions, particularly around what you believe is the truth. So it's nice to just pause and go, okay, so what do you really believe is the truth? Because if you can look at that, you can begin to see this aggregate called perception. And not tonight, but as we round out this sutra, however long it takes to get there, we're going to do the culminating essence teachings of the Buddha, which has to do with the perceptual distortions, how they condition the view of separation and suffering, and what can be done about it. Because we're not just talking about these things so that maybe someday, maybe, we get lucky, or grace descends. We're talking about something that is both deeply artistic and scientific simultaneously. We're talking about the human being's inborn innate capacity to awaken, to realize their birthright, put it in any language you want, to know God, to be free, to transcend suffering, to get out of prison, call it whatever you will, salvation, redemption, whatever you want to call it, it's the same thing, regardless of the wording. In one sense, it's the only game in town, even while we can do lots of other things. But it's only the only game in town to those who see that. You make up your own game, don't you? And sometimes the game changes during the course of life. It's difficult to turn away, go back into slumber sleep, or avoidance ignorance. Once the chandra means spiritual passion, once chandra awakens, it's difficult to go back and keep hurting yourself and hurting others in the same way. We hurt when we judge experience. Remember, mindfulness is free from three things: judgment, decision, and commentary. Now, consciousness, the fifth aggregate. First aggregate, body. Second aggregate, feeling. Third aggregate, mental formations. That's thoughts for us. Fourth aggregate, perception. Fifth, consciousness. The delusion is that consciousness is permanent. Consciousness doesn't change. Yes, it does. What happened to consciousness in deep sleep? Where's consciousness in deep sleep? I spoke with a person today who has an interesting view about dying. He believes, as others may believe, that death is an eternal sleep. Deep sleep, not dream, deep sleep. He believes this because he sees nothing to evidence to the contrary. Now, it's coupled with an interesting little default mechanism called, when things get really rough, he thinks he can just check out. But this isn't satisfactory. This is not peaceful. He knows there's something that doesn't smell right about it. Most people have in their life at times some suicidal ideation. They think about knocking themselves off. Anybody not have that experience? There's a big difference between that and someone who's truly suicidal. The person who's truly suicidal is craving for non-existence. The Buddha was very clear, there's three kinds of craving: craving for pleasant experiences, craving for existence, and craving for non-existence. People who are truly suicidal, they just do it. So this gentleman had a belief. It's a belief. It's a perceptual distortion. Most of your beliefs are perceptual distortions. A if I stop talking in a little bit and you want to share a perceptual view or belief, we'll see if we can unpack it and show that it's a distortion. Consciousness reveals this. All that consciousness does is it just shines its light on that which is arising. So in this conversation, this gentleman and I had an opportunity to shine consciousness on this light, or as a light, on this belief that dying means eternal sleep without problems. And that checking out when life's really difficult could be a good option. You want to roll those dice? Who are you going to believe? The fifth aggregate, consciousness, reveals that all that consciousness does is know the object without interfering with it. It's like mindfulness. Only these two different words here, aren't they? Let me suggest this. Mindfulness is like the microscope that the light of consciousness pours itself through to see the object on the specimen plate. Mindfulness is like the lens. Consciousness is the light that comes through the lens. We think of, and here's the delusion again, we think of consciousness as permanent. We think of ourselves as consciousness. If you loosen up around the body, the feeling, the mental formations and the perceptions, not to say that they're not you, but just to see that you're not limited to that, and usually what sticks for many people is consciousness. They believe they are the consciousness. They believe they are, whether they've heard it or read it, that they are witnessing. This is just an idea. It's another perception. You're witnessing this experience. In an instant, spontaneously or through inquiry, it can be seen, there is no witness. Where's the witness? There's witnessing, but there is no witness. The self, yourself, is simply a process of becoming. This becoming that, arising and passing with transition in between. That's what's happening here. That's what this is. That's what the five aggregates are. Arising, transition, and passing. Body, feeling, mental formation, perception, and consciousness. Once it's clear that consciousness is that faculty that knows the objects is simply actually another object, then something that we'll just for the moment call awareness, kind of like the sun behind the sun. If the sun is consciousness, what's illuminating the sun? Again, no words. What illuminates the sun? Not the sun is illuminating. What illuminates the sun? Incomprehensible. So these five aggregates begin to be seen as arising and passing phenomena. They begin to be seen as nothing worth clinging on to as myself. And then they flow more freely. It's a byproduct. They flow more easily. Body, feeling, perception, mental formation, consciousness. This, you want to talk about stress reduction? The fluidity of the five aggregates, you might say, at the level of the body-mind process, is the most profound stress reduction. What is stress? It's simply an accumulation, you might say, a holding, a resisting, a clinging, a resisting of life's flow. not stress. De-stress? Discover that there's no point in grasping what by nature is changing and ultimately is unsatisfactory, cannot bring a lasting happiness. Your body-mind process cannot bring a lasting happiness. Temporary, yes. Lasting? No. It's not the end of the story, though. Some people at this point go, "Wow, I'm screwed. This is it? Sensory happiness, getting things my way, is unsatisfactory, ultimately a prison. I'm screwed. I've been going in the wrong direction. I've been trying to get my act together, get my stuff together, get my relationships together, get my money together, get my things together. I'm going to get my things together, get my things together, get my spirituality together. I'm going to get myself together, and then I'm going to be fine." We can't even find, in an experiential way, the one who's actually going to do that. But we believe sometimes in the delusion. We believe that this is possible. The next piece of the fourth foundation is the six internal and external sense bases. And the sixth sense base is the mind itself. The other five are very clear. I with I object, object of sight. Ear with object of sound. Nose with object of smell. Tongue with object of taste. Body with tangibles like sensations. The contemplation of the sixth sense bases means that it becomes discovered that what life actually is are these moment-to-moment contacts. Eye with eye object, ear with sound, nose with smell, tongue with taste, body with feeling. It's happening very, very fast. So fast, we think of it as continuous. It's actually like very rapidly appearing and disappearing frames on a movie screen. That's what the movie's made of, right? The motion picture, it's made of individual frames. Now what happens for many people, and I mentioned this last week in brief, is that those hindrances tend to arise because of unresolved psycho-emotional issues. The desire, the aversion, the restlessness, the sleepiness, and the doubt are often connected to your biographical history, which means what happened to you in your body-mind process. That you have unresolved or unfinished business about. And as you sit to meditate, what happens is the hindrances arise often related to psycho-emotional issues. That's why psychology is very, very useful as a part of the awakening process, because it includes an appreciation for the conditioning that arose, that was impressed upon you from your family of origin. When you were too innocent and vulnerable to say to somebody who was misbehaving, whether it was your mother or father, "Would you please calm down and just watch your breath because you're misbehaving and it's hurting me?" Or, "Money's not that important, Dad. Just breathe." Or, "Mom, you don't have to get so upset. It's really okay. I'm okay, you're okay. It's okay." Who even had that thought as a 4 or 5 year old or 2 year old or infant when the shit was happening? And sometimes it's way more painful than how I'm talking about it right now. We get wounded. we get hurt. We get mistreated. We get forgotten, neglected, abused, left alone, told us to do this and not do that, told how to succeed and how to be and how not to be by those who we might say, when our mind, heart opens clearly enough to the truth, were actually doing the best they can, even when they were completely effing up. As one friend who I used to have a good opportunity to teach with, I considered him both a friend and a teacher. Those are two different things. Teacher is someone who can help you see something that you've never seen before. Friends do this too, sometimes. Sometimes your non-friends do this too. He called these things that happen to you when you're innocent, oddball moments. Or as a friend, another friend used to say, she said, I was doing great until I was hit by the 2x4 of life. It hit me right on the right temple. We have different ways of describing this. I was doing fine and then the bus hit me. So the meditation reveals that your psychological, your psychodynamic, your biographical history, whether you remember it or not, influences the arising of moment-to-moment experience, and therefore it's nice to be able to have insight and to have some sense of completion with where you've been. Because how can you really see what's happening in the present if the present is getting filled up with what's unresolved from the past? So these six sense bases, the internal means the sense organ itself. The external means the object that meets the internal. So every moment here, what's happening is moment of sight, moment of hearing, moment of smell, moment of taste, moment of body perception. Arising and passing very, very quickly. So much so that it presents to us in such a way that we think it's permanent. And because we think it's permanent, we also think we are it. And thus we form a self. We grasp and create a self around the five aggregates and the six sense bases. The contemplation, the mindfulness, the bare attention reveals these things as they really are, arising and passing, beginning and ending, with only transition in between. Okay, that's a lot. I'm going to have to save the seven factors of enlightenment and also save the Four Noble Truths for coming weeks. But let me pause here and see if there's anything you want to ask, something that needs clarification, sorting out, anything that felt not clear or complete for you.